My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A main, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Not too bad. Wrestling season started this week. Huzzah. You know, it was good. Yeah. It's good. Good week of practice for us. So hopefully we get to keep going.
That's good, man. That's good. So I saw a post that you made on Facebook, and I meant to ask you about it before we went live on the air. So I'm just going to call you out on it right now.
What did I say?
You said that the new Running Man was the best movie you've seen in like 20 years. Tell me about this because I'm excited.
Action movie. Best pure action movie. So I went with my buddy Friday night to see this. Didn't really want to go. Was not feeling it. Went. And about 5 minutes in, I looked at my buddy. And we're both big Arnold fans. So this was like, oh, let's go see this. And you know, I'm a King guy. So I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot because the book is very different than the movie. About 5 minutes in, I look at him and go, this fucking rules. This fucking rules. And nice. By the end of the movie, I was like bouncing off the walls on cloud nine. I love it. I don't know. I heard it's not doing great, and I was surprised to learn that. I don't know if it's just like a poor marketing campaign or people just aren't feeling it, but I think this movie is culturally viable. I think it's a shit ton of fun. It's an Edgar Winter movie.
Edgar Winter.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Albino. Edgar Wright movie. He have Shaun of the Dead, Scott Pilgrim, etc., etc.
Yeah. I love those movies. Yeah.
They're good. I thought this was a really, really good movie. I thought the action was great. It's a lot like in terms of tone and vibe. It's not like RoboCop. Like it's not nearly it's violent, but it's not as violent as RoboCop. Because what is?
Right.
But I mean, like, as far as like tone and like, you know, pop culture, making fun of the future and TV and stuff like that. It's got a lot of those vibes to it. It's a lot of fun. I really like Glenn Powell. I think the man should be Batman, quite frankly. The first thing I've seen him in, really.
Yeah. So I liked him in Top Gun Maverick. Of course, I love Top Gun Maverick. I am a redneck, so that's like right up my alley. It's like, and I liked him in Twisters. I thought he was good in that too. I was not going to watch Twisters, by the way. I liked, you know, Twister came out like 96. I loved that movie when I was a kid. But Twisters, like, looking back on it, you know, it's like, maybe that wasn't that good a movie, but I loved it when I was like 13.
Yeah, I get it.
So the new Twisters, I was not planning on watching it, but then my wife and I, we had the TV for a while, or we had the TV to ourselves for a little bit. Like, I think my daughter was at school, and so and she was like, you want to watch a movie? And I was like, yeah, sure. So we pulled up the Peacock app when I still had it, and it was like the first thing. She goes, oh, I've been wanting to see that. I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And like, so I reluctantly turned it on, and I was like, okay, this is a pretty good movie. It's like, yeah, I enjoyed it. So it was a good fun movie.
That's how I felt about Running Man. Like,
yeah,
I wasn't expecting. I didn't know what what to expect because the Schwarzenegger movie is so Arnold, right? And yeah. This is not. And they really take a different stance on it, and they really do their own thing while keeping closer to the vibe of the original Richard Bachman, Stephen King book. So, oh, Ben Goodman in the comments says, I love to see Edgar Winters version of the you know, I don't deserve to live that one down. Put that on my fucking tombstone.
Edgar Winter Band kind of ruled, though. Hold on.
Let me did, really, it's good stuff. Frankenstein's a good song.
Like, but he had more than Frankenstein. He had a Free Ride. That's right.
Free
Ride.
Free Ride. Good one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the like the opening. Isn't that the opening track to Dazed and Confused? Like one of the great soundtracks of all time. Yeah,
it is literally one of the greatest soundtrack films of all time. I think it's an overrated movie, but I think as far as soundtracks go, it's awesome.
I completely disagree. I think that Dazed and Confused is one of like the most rewatchable movies like ever made. Like anytime it's on, like I can just watch. It's still funny to me to this day. I still love that damn movie, and like the quotes in it are just fantastic. I mean, it's like brainless entertainment, but I love it.
Matthew McConaughey on his own in the movie is remarkably quotable because we all know that guy, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like it as much as I'm on an island on this. I totally realize that. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. I think in your youth and probably even to this day, you like to go against the grain a little bit on some of this stuff. Yeah. And so like Dazed and Confused, like for my generation, I'm only a couple years younger than you. So for our generation, it was like huge, right? And for me it was like it connected me to my dad because it was a movie about his generation, right?
Fair.
But it was set like it aired in our generation, but it was about his generation, so like we were both able to watch that movie and enjoy it. It was kind of cool. You okay over there?
We had a something like boomed over here, and I don't know what it is, but no one seems to be screaming, so I think we're okay. I hate when stuff's going. I hate doing a show and like you hear something. You're like, is the family dead? Did the dog do something stupid? Which is a good chance of that happening. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm kind of an iconoclast in that regard. Like I like to kind of. I do like to go against the grain. I'm proud that my son came home from school and said, "Dad, 6-7 is the stupidest thing of all time," and I'm like, "Yes, yes, it is." So I'm also raising a little snob because he refused to participate in that.
My daughter's school banned it, right? So like, or at least her teacher, like she's like, because like it was disrupting the class, like it was getting really bad. And so they banned it. So my daughter has banned it at the house and like actually wrote like signs and put them up around the house. No 6-7 talk. So she's like, if it's a rule at school, it's a rule at home. And so she's wanting us to follow the rules.
Oh, you got a rule. You got a rule follower. I got one of those too. Andy's big time following the rules of things. He refuses to do any 6-7 stuff. I have kids at the high. I'm a high school teacher. Keep in mind.
Yeah.
It's getting better, but like at the beginning of the year, it was obscene. I had to make a deal with a kid in video production class who was just not doing his work that I would appear in one of his videos doing the 6-7 meme if he would do his work. And as a man of my word, I did it. Like I lost a little bit of respect for myself, but I motivated my student. It's a box upon us all.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and get into the show a little bit. Hold on, Alter the Squirrel. Okay, 6-7. He's in on that deal, I guess. Let's go ahead and get into the show though, man. So I wanted this to be a Hall of Fame retrospective. I wanted to talk about blood and
right.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Bob Caudle. I wanted to talk about Blood and Guts, but these people at TNA, they just cannot seem to just not screw things up. I have a TNA podcast where I can cover all this stuff, but I did my show on Thursday night, and since Thursday, these guys are in the midst of one of the all-time worst PR weeks that any company could have, like outside of things that were like not within their control. Like these are self-inflicted wounds that they're creating, right? Now WWE's had some that were like, you know, like people dying and things like that, like stuff that's like kind of like outside of their control, but this is all like TNA being TNA, and for whatever reason figuring out a way to shoot themselves in the foot, and even worse at times. So Let's go ahead. We're going to go back, JD. We're going to go back to like Monday. We're going to go back to like Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
Brandon Thurston got the turnstile count report for Bound for Glory. Now, I covered this. I covered this on Thursday night, by the way, already. So I don't want to go like too deep into it, but I do want to get your opinion of it or just get your thoughts on it. So
my initial thought is at least he's spreading the wealth on this. Like, he's not just going to go after, because I was like, why are we going after AEW for stuff like this? Like, why are we, like, he's going to WWE and he's going to do TNA. If he's going to spread the wealth along and now start going after Court Bauer's Cicero numbers, whatever. Sure. That's if he gets off on that. Cool.
I think the reason why he went after AEW and the reason why he's gone after TNA is because the information was available to him. I don't think that this is like a targeted thing because
I don't know. I in a world where we have all these problems, like worked attendance figures just don't bother me. Maybe I'm a bad person.
No, I don't care. It's really not that big of a deal. But because I have a TNA podcast, I have to cover it, right? Like, it's news.
I get it. Yeah,
but it didn't really pick up that much traction. But I guess the moral of the story is, so they announced 7,794 tickets, right? That was their attendance. Well, Brandon, because the Tsonga Center at the University of Massachusetts Lowell is like a publicly funded venue, right? He was able to get the actual gate receipts for how many people not only bought tickets, but for how many people actually went in. He got the turnstile count. It was similar to like AEW's All Out in London and even in Texas, right? So so it's a public venue, so he's able to get that data. And so he actually had the actual freaking receipts, right? So it's irrefutable evidence. You cannot argue against the evidence that he's providing, right? Although people did try. So he gets it. So they announced 7,700 attendance, right? They sold 5,500 tickets for a gate of 390,000, which that is tremendous for TNA, by the way.
Really good.
Yeah. That's a good day at the office for TNA. That's probably the biggest gate of their history. They've never announced that, but I'm assuming that it is. That's true. He also said that they had 6,100 tickets scanned. So then he goes to talk to Ross Foreman, whom I've had my dealings with in the past. And Ross Foreman was like, well, we had some VIP sections. And he goes, maybe there's some people that didn't get their tickets scanned. And he goes, we also had like the crew. We count the crew as part of the attendance. And then the crew brought friends and family and this and that. But we're not talking the vendors, like the vendors on the outside. We're not talking them. So a completely made up bullshit. I told everybody ahead of time that they were going to work this number because they were bound and determined to break this record. They didn't break the record. They got caught in a lie and everybody made fun of them for it. So that's how the week starts. Right. Good on Brandon for getting the data. Joel Pearl's in the chat. What's up, Big Joel? It says Brandon's system is to inquire after any company that runs a venue has public records requests that are obtainable. Yeah. Yeah.
I get it. Look, I just don't get
it's WrestleNomics. He's a nerd. Like, this is what he likes. He likes math. He likes spreadsheets. I subscribed in the past because he used to be able to get all the ratings information for TNA, and I was doing a TNA podcast. So it was valuable to me at the time. I quit subbing once he was not able to get that information anymore. But he put everything in a spreadsheet breakdown, and he had every available TV rating for TNA going back years and years and years on a spreadsheet. And it was like, who in their right mind would actually like this? But he does, and I used it because I was writing stories about it. So it worked.
It's a great resource. It's a great
resource.
It is great when you're writing. I remember back when I was writing, to be able to call upon those kind of things and to verify and whatnot. That's awesome. But, you know, I would not want to be that guy personally.
Yeah, but some people are like love spreadsheets and numbers. So yeah, good for him. I think he's great at what he does.
No doubt.
He's the only one doing it. And he pissed a lot of TNA fans off, right? Yes. So hold on, King of the North drops a super chat. King of the North, my brother. I said, come get this belt, Gerard. Don't run from it. him and Gerard, he's been putting belt ass to Gerard on Twitter. So big new distribution deal, Gerard. More on that later. But
$2 Canadian. What does that work out to be?
I don't know. I mean, is their economy better than ours right now? Because ours is in the tank. Ours is
pretty shitty, so it can't be worse.
Yeah. All right. So that's how the week starts, right? Ticket sales finds out they're frauds. And so we're like, okay, this can't, nothing can be like worse than what that happened. Well, nope. You get to Thursday night, their live impact special. And we talked about this on overtime, but I'm just kind of recapping their very bad week. And they get there and they maybe have 200 people in a building that they set up for 600, just empty seats, just in full view. It looks terrible. The crowd is dead and they've been off for a month, right? So they didn't do a very good job of promoting the show. They priced the tickets way too high for a venue that people mostly get into for free. They're trying to make money off of these people. So boom, another mistake right there. Well, then Frankie Kazarian ends up cashing in his Call Your Shot trophy that he co-owns, by the way, JD. Him and Nick Nemeth, they had a double pin. So now they're both the winner. So they both take turns with the trophy. So he cashes it in and he defeats Mike Santana with a roll up, and the internet just goes apeshit on these people. Me included. In fact, at one point I said that everybody there should get fired. Okay. A little stiff. I said that I hope they don't get a TV deal and that everybody gets fired. Okay. Admittedly, probably overboard. I don't want everybody to lose their jobs. I'd be fine with like three or four people losing their jobs, but I don't want an entire company of maybe like 75 to 100 people lose their jobs. That's not what I want. Okay. I can't believe I have to put that disclaimer out there, but sometimes I'm a dick. And that's what I was being, but not as bad as they were because they took the belt off Mike Santana. So fuck them. so they take the belt off Mike Santana, and just one by one, they're just being buried, right? And they're being buried so hard that Gerard couldn't defend it. Like, that's how bad.
That's impressive.
Gerard was almost as mad as I was about the whole thing. He did a whole video on it. He was like burying them. He went on to a podcast last night on the Body Slam network and buried it again there. so like, you know, it's got to be really bad if freaking Gerard is burying it. Io, though, our boy Io, holding strong.
He's like, still putting out this like. This is good.
Heal heat, man. Io holding strong. He's still like. I said TNA fucking sucks, and he put like their ticket information under my tweet. I don't think anybody's gonna buy the tickets they're gonna go to that site because he did that, but he's still holding strong. Like, I can't not respect the guy for how powerful he is.
The TNA faithful always, and then, by the way, most TNA faithful will also make fun of TNA, which makes them pretty great, but like, I love that there will always be defenders. I was a defender in your mentions, and I went off on them. You're like, dude, it's someone working a gimmick on there. I'm like, oh, my bad.
Yeah. Well, that was Junkyard Akiyama. He's like a big time AEW fan.
Oh, it and was? I didn't realize.
Me and him bust each other's balls like that. Like, if he says anything about AEW, it's like, you just don't love AEW enough. Like, I'll say that to him, and he does the same thing to me. So it's like,
gotcha.
Us trying to get it under each other's skin. So. Yeah. But you jumped to my defense like a true like a hero.
You're my friend. Like, you're my partner. Like, someone says shit, I'm like, fuck you. Only I get to do this.
Yeah. Only JD gets to bust my balls.
That's right.
Okay.
So TNA sucks. Yeah. Continue.
Yeah. So that's Thursday night. It's like, okay, this week can't get any worse for TNA. First we start with the ticket sales, and then Mike Santana loses the belt. And then comes Friday ahead of Turning Point. Now, Turning Point was their TNA Plus special that they literally only had a one-day build for, despite the fact that they were off for a month. At any point during that month, they could have announced matches, yet they decided not to. They decided to wait till Thursday to announce matches for a show on Friday, right? Now, to their credit, they did sell the show out, 600 people, okay, whatever. They did sell it out. It did look full. But as we all know with their attendance, they said 600, probably 450. Taking a wild guess. Okay. But during the day, somebody from that company, I don't know who it was. I guessed it was Tummy Dreamer because Mike Johnson was the first one to put out the story, but I've been told it was not Tummy. Okay. But somebody in that company, an executive, decided to, he's trying to work the dirt sheets by saying that Mike Santana has not been answering his phone. No one can get a hold of him, and he has not showed up to the building. Mike Santana, who the day before announced that he was 1,000 days sober, right? 20 years to the, almost to the day of when Eddie Guerrero was found in his hotel room dead because of his addiction issues. They're saying that Mike Santana is not showing up and nobody can get a hold of him. Now, I don't think they thought it through, but that was the first thing that people thought of. In fact, whenever that story first broke, when PW Insider broke it, there were people saying, oh my God, I hope Mike's okay. And they sent that message to PW Insider. They tried to get Sean, but Sean's, Ross Sapp's too smart, right? But Mike Johnson will just print whatever you tell him because he's a dipshit. Now, not only will he print whatever you tell him, he'll print whatever other people tell other reporters, and he'll call it his own news. Notorious for that.
Call him out on it.
Yeah. And then they got Dr. Featherbottom put that out, and he was so heartbroken that he was lied to. that someone tried to work him, poor Featherbottom. And they sent it out to PWI Pro Wrestling Illustrated. They tried to do the same thing because Mike no-showed an interview with them, and that was part of the storyline. All right, so
Pro Wrestling Illustrated, famously kayfabe magazine. Continue.
Yes. Yeah. And so this thing lasts, and then when people started calling them out on it, then they leaked. They went ahead and had their contacts update the story that no, Mike is safe and he's actually at the building. It's like, you dipshits, man.
Pro wrestling. See, I'm always okay. I'm the first guy to be like, hey, man, I like seeing a little bit of work in. I don't mind, you know, I don't mind when people are a little bit grimy with pro wrestling a little bit. And I don't think they thought people were thinking that Mike Santana would fall back into addiction. I truly don't believe that is what they were going. I think they were trying to go that he was pulling out of the company for being this very Russo-esque storyline they're putting together.
Yeah.
Where the idea being that Mike is so mad that he had to put over, Frankie Kazarian, that he's not coming to work anymore, you know, because we can't fucking get out of the 2000s. We just can't. We have all died and gone to pro wrestling hell, where every dumb fucking idea Vince Russo had is just going to loop around us forever, and it's a cycle that we can't get out. So here we are, and I can't believe a guy got mad that a wrestling person tried to work him. These people are not your friends. I'm going to keep saying this again. Like anyone who's a pro wrestler, but they're different. They're my butt. No, they are liars, professional liars. Yeah.
If you're a journalist and there's a wrestler or an executive that's willingly giving you inside information, it's because they it's like currency to them. They're putting it out there for a reason. They're either advancing a storyline, or they're trying to get back at somebody, or they're trying to get something out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because I played a role in this 5 years ago.
Yes, Callis.
Yes, I was worked by Don Callis, but I knew it. I knew he had something in mind. I wasn't sure what it was. I remember having this conversation with Garrett and Justin Nipper, and Garrett goes, what's his angle? Why is he working us? And I said, I don't know, but he chose me, so I want to go with it. You know, and it was fun to use it for the Kenny Omega turn. I'm not heartbroken about that. I'm not like, I can't believe he lied to me. I played into it. Don Callis called me a mark or some shit like that. I'm lying. It was fun. Like, pro wrestling, man. Join.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Okay. Here's the problem. Here's what I really see as a problem. Did you say Cuckchair Carlos made himself a character on the show now?
Oh, we're not even to that point yet. Like, we haven't even hit turning point yet. Let's get to turning point. So on turning point, on the pre-show, Frankie Kazarian calls out Carlos Silva. Carlos Silva comes out, and they did an angle. Like, he didn't get attacked or anything like that, but they did an angle because they're trying to find out like who the NXT people are that attacked everybody, and they think that Frankie's in on it, right? At this point in the storyline, they think that Frankie's in on it, and so they said they're going to be launching an investigation and yada yada. This is part of the gimmick. They didn't need Carlos Silva for that because they have an on-screen general manager, right? But these carnies in creative, they can't not get the boss on television. They did the same thing to Scott. Now, I don't think Scott's arm had to get twisted on that. They did the same thing to Damore.
Yeah, Scott's always loved being on TV, so let's not
sure
about that.
Yeah, But he will tell you that he did not want to do it, and it was R.D. Evans and Jimmy Jacobs talking him into it, right? so sure. Yeah. Yeah, but every time that he was a character on in TNA, even when he was a wrestler, he always figured out a way to get himself right into the camera. When he was like the manager for Team Canada, that dude was barking into the camera and trying to be in almost every segment.
Dude, when we started Bracer Impact, this got 4 years ago now, like I used to compare, the whole show revolved around Scott. Like I used to say, if you watch TNA Impact, it is, or just back then it was just Impact, it's essentially the Muppet Show of pro wrestling with Scott as Kermit. Trying to, if you ever watch the original Muppet Show, the whole thing is about how Kermit was trying to hold the show together with all these lunatics. That's exactly what Impact was when Scott was running things with his little headset on his. Come on, man. Tell me the guy doesn't hold the camera.
Like his headset's not plugged into anything and he's just wearing it at all times. But you know, at least what I could say for Scott, he was a seasoned performer. I thought he was a pretty good on-screen character. BQ reported this after Scott had got fired, that the reason why Santino was hired is because the Anthem folks were sick of seeing Scott on TV. So they wanted to phase Scott off TV, but they brought in Santino as the authority figure. They purchased the name to Santino. And he comes in, and instead of phasing Scott out, Scott was on just as much as he always was, but we just have two authority figures. And so it looks like we're heading there now with Carlos Silva, who Joel said Carlos loves being front and center. Carlos wants to be, and we're seeing this, it's in WWE 2 with Triple H. Carlos wants to be the Dana White of TNA. And he's put himself front and center. I mean, look, I'll be honest. Admittedly, I did not watch World Series of Fighting back then or the PFL the president of the PFL. I just didn't watch it. But I get the feeling that he might have been like heavily involved in that too, whenever he was the president. And in fact, I think certain people were fired after he was hired because he wanted everybody to know exactly who was in charge, right? So next thing you know, Ariel's gone and Gail's gone, and anybody that he thought maybe was probably like after his spot or maybe a threat to his authority, they had to go. So he's very much wanting to be the guy that's in charge.
At least Tony took himself off TV. That's all I got.
He's been back on TV lately though.
Why is he really?
Yeah. With the Young Bucks storyline, it's the Young Bucks and Tony, and he was also on TV with MJF recently too. Before MJF went to go film another movie, so yeah.
The egos on these. I guess you have to have a massive ego to want to run a professional wrestling company, but they all suck. God, again, like one more time, the Vince Russo cycle of the 2000s. Like everything is for the control of the company, and like I hate it. I hate it all so much. I actually miss Jack Tunney, like this vapid suit that would just show up and say things once in a while, make his declaration, and leave.
Yeah,
God, Nick Bockwinkel, same thing.
Yeah, Nick Bockwinkel's cool in WCW, I thought. I mean, like, the authority figure thing can work if it's the right person, but it gets so played out. It's so tropey. We've had it on television since, you know, Eric Bischoff turned heel.
30 years. It's been 30 fucking years. Get a new idea. I would love pro wrestling if they just did something, I don't know, new.
Yeah. I'll be honest. Turning Point was a series of matches that weren't really heavily storyline involved. A lot of them were hot-shotted from the night before. But a lot of the matches were pretty good, right? And in fact, I think the system versus the Rascals, which was an 8-man tag. So Desmond Xavier's back in TNA now, and he's with the Rascals. And so that was, although Mackenzie Mitchell did announce him as Desmond Alexander because the match right before it was Cedric Alexander's match. So he was called him Desmond Alexander. It was just like, it's from the girl that said Ching Chong China. She's calling him Desmond Alexander. Like she's had a rough year.
Errors are funny, so I'm just curious. Like, is she actually like good at this job?
I think mostly she's pretty good at the job. She's definitely an upgrade over Penzer, and I would say an upgrade over Jade Chung. But she's not like top tier or anything like that. I mean, look, how hard can that job be? You got to read the names off your card and well, just enunciate and do it and, like, have a nice voice. But she is a professional, I would say. But, yeah, she's got two really bad screw-ups in a year's time.
Hey, man, Michael Buffer called him Brett the Hitman Clark once.
Yeah.
You know, that happened.
Yeah. But I do think that Turning Point, like, even though it was a very inconsequential show, ended up being pretty good. But here's where they screwed up again. So the main event, they did the whole storyline with Mike Santana. Nobody's seen or heard from him. His tag team partner, Steve Macklin, they're in the main event, and it's against Nick Nemeth, and Frankie Kazarian, the new champion. So Macklin, he's like playing, like, I'm a Marine, I'll fuck these guys up myself. So he does the match, handicap match, for a while. And then Mike Santana shows up halfway through the match. No explanation as to where he's been. Just shows up, elbow all taped up because he got it smashed in a chair the night before. And then he just proceeds to pin Frankie Kazarian, the new world champion. So, like, for no reason whatsoever. And then afterwards, the NXT guys hit the ring and they beat up everybody, including Frankie. And so that's how they go off the air, with the NXT guys kind of destroying everything. But here's the problem with the NXT guys. They're all geeks. Like, it's none of the NXT stars. It's Lexus King. It's Stax, right? Brooks Jensen. I keep on calling him Brooks and Dunn, but Brooks Jensen. Like these guys. Guys who were probably on the bubble in NXT and might end up being in TNA anyway. Robert Stone, Robbie E, that guy. He's on there too.
Well, Robbie E kind of makes sense because he has such a long history of TNA. So that works for me. That checks. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And William Regal's son, but yeah, he's there too.
Okay. Who cares? No one's cared about him. It's funny to me. I just remember back when Lexus King first showed up at NXT like 2 years ago, when we first heard the Tony fumbled Lexus King cooks, because everyone who talks on Twitter talks like that, and I hate them all, and I wish they were dead. I and then these people just go, oh wait, it's still Brian Pillman Jr. and he's still not good at professional wrestling. So the fact that he continues to fail downward is entertaining to me, because he got a lot of opportunities just because his dad was pretty good. So I don't know, man. This whole thing, I'm surprised we're still going with this, to be honest with you, but I guess it's not as important to NXT anymore if we've truly relegated the C team to it.
Okay. So you would think that's where the TNA's very bad weekends.
But there's more.
Oh, but there's more. So the next night, so Saturday night was the TV tapings. So they did Thursday night a live episode. And they taped some stuff before they went live, like on their pre-show. Turning Point was like their pay-per-view or their TNA Plus special. And then Saturday night is their tapings afterwards. It's going to carry them into Final Resolution in El Paso next month. So they did the TV tapings. So during the TV tapings, it was revealed, spoiler guys, if you're in the chat or if you're watching live or if you're on audio or wherever you're listening to this, I'm going to give you guys a spoiler. So giving you an opportunity to just shut the show off right now. So here's a spoiler. They proceeded to book for the main event of Final Resolution, Frankie Kazarian defending his title against Fandango, otherwise known as Johnny Dango Curtis, JDC, who is retiring in January. So as part of his retirement gift, they're going to give him a main event. People are going to spend their hard-earned money for that main event. So world title match with Fandango and Frankie Kazarian, Final Resolution, El Paso, Texas. So there you go.
You're 100% right that they're just doing the Josh Alexander story over.
Yes.
It's the exact same thing. Remember, I remember 3 years ago, we were like, why the fuck wouldn't Moose defend against Josh Alexander immediately? And we had no answers then. And it turned, and they didn't either. They just kept it away. So we're doing the same fucking thing.
To your point, JD, on that same taping, Mike Santana came out and announced that he's not focused on Frankie right now. He wants to go after all the NXT guys that keeps attacking him, and he's going to one by one beat them up.
That's exactly what Josh did. That's the same exact story. Like, yeah. Again, I am just begging people to do something different. Like, do something new. That story is like 3 years old. Like, what the fuck? Like,
it's 3 years old in the same company.
In the same company.
Slight variations, but it's the same story beats. So instead of beating Josh at Bound for Glory, like when they beat Josh at Bound for Glory, they did it on the very next live event.
who wants this? You can't know. We got a lot of these TNA mecha people that show up and listen to you and stuff. Not me. They listen to you. Who wants to see Frankie Kazarian versus Fandango in a main event? Like, who thinks this is good? I'm so confused.
That match was booked for their friends, legitimately, because I'm telling you, JD, Johnny Dango Curtis, JDC, is one of the more beloved guys in that company, and he's retiring. That's what they did. Like, it's literally like, we love this guy, and he's had some pretty good matches this year. He's not like a star. He shouldn't be in a main event, but they legitimately booked it because he's their friend.
Mike, we're not talking about a TNA special. We're talking about a pay-per-view, correct?
No, TNA special.
Oh, TNA Plus, you know, special. Okay, then if that's the case, I take it back.
It's going to be on Friday night, head-to-head with SmackDown. It's, you know, yeah. Hey, they'll be lucky to sell 2,000 tickets to that.
Okay. That's, you know, they're not going to sell shit. You're right. But if it's just a TNA special, I find it less offensive, so whatever. Yeah. It's still stupid, but whatever.
Yeah. And then, but wait, there's more.
Oh, there's more, you say?
Yeah. Before the end of the night. So there's this guy in Orlando, Florida named Jacob Cohen. And he goes to every wrestling show that's in Orlando. And he's always there. If TV, like, no matter how big or how small, he goes to all of them that are there. And he's got a pretty active Twitter account. And he was taking pictures of the matches. And really, he doesn't spoil anything. He doesn't, like, give you match results or anything like that. But he'll tell you what matches he's watching. And that's it. Well, they kicked him out for that. They went and said that he was videotaping the matches, and they went and kicked him out. And then they went and kicked out, a family with a couple of kids, because they were allegedly filming the matches. They all claimed their innocence, but TNA said they didn't care and actually kicked these people out, would not even give them a refund. Which prompted Tony Khan to then tag Jacob Cohen on Twitter. Tony Khan did this immediately afterwards and said, "You're always welcome at our shows in Orlando. Anytime we come to town, you're always welcome." So it's like, these guys just can't not get out of their own way.
Jacob Cohen does go to the. I remember when AEW was running the old Impact Zone. He was doing the same thing. It's where I first heard him from. Why? Why? Like, spoilers for posting. This is not 1986. Like,
yeah.
What? I don't get it. Like, I don't understand why in this day and age, like, especially we have TNA fans. If you watch TNA. You don't care, and usually they announce the matches ahead of time anyway. Like,
yes,
you can't. You bank a month's worth of TV. You think you can keep this stuff secret in 2025? I don't. Man, they had a really bad week. Carlos Silva, kind of an idiot.
Yeah. They just continue to shoot themselves in the foot. Like, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. hold on. This is a good point. Dre said, "You only kick someone out if you're ashamed of the matches." Yeah, they don't want anybody to know what matches are coming because they want people to actually watch.
Oh my God. Like, yeah. That's just great too, because Chris Jericho last week, who's very clearly on his way back to WWE, had to point out that TNA looked like the second biggest company in the world compared to those tapings from when they ran the ECW arena.
ECW,
yeah. It's like, that was like 3 months ago, and okay, sure, pal. Boy, he really, you know, he's his knack. Chris Jericho has a knack for keeping his name in the news and saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. Like, just never fucking fails.
Yeah, he said that, and then a day later, they pulled all those shenanigans. Like, the bottom was still out. Because I'll be honest,
for a year, unbelievable. Continue.
He said that podcast came out after the Brandon Thurston story hit. So more people were talking about what Jericho said versus Brandon's story. Like, it, the Brandon story had been kicked out of the news cycle already at that point. And now everybody's talking about Jericho and, like, Jericho propping up TNA and is he going to go to WWE? So, like, that, like, it kicked Thurston's story out of the headlines already. And so I was like, okay, this is actually kind of a win for TNA because Jericho – has like changed, has changed the news, right? Mm-hmm. And then immediately just one self-inflicted gunshot wound after another from TNA. And then it ends with them kicking one of the most loyal hardcore fans that they have, kicking him out of the building because he was taking pictures of the entrances, not even giving away match spoilers or anything like that. Like, nobody knows who won the matches, right? Well, I mean, they do now because Gerard posted all the spoilers on Body Slam, but it's like, it's all going to come out anyway.
Brother, it's 2025. Everyone's got a cell phone. This is actually a hotspot. Yeah. My phone's a camera, so I had to use a prop. everyone's got a phone with a camera in it. Like, pictures are going to get taken. I don't understand where we're headed. I mean, like, it's so – the beauty of this is it's so TNA. Like, this is – stupid shit like this is woven into the DNA of this company that called itself TNA because – Jerry Jarrett thought people might get confused and think it was porn and or when they ordered it. That's a true story.
Yes. Yeah. Tits and ass wrestling.
Tits and ass wrestling from day one. They thought purrs would go, oh, we'll order this.
Yeah. And Jeff Jarrett explained double entendre is how he explained it. So, so that's what we're dealing with, folks. So it's been a hell of a week. But King of the North asked a good question. He said, where's the TV deal, Carlos Silva? Well, JD, we got some news on that. We don't have the news, but we got some news. John Alba of Sports Illustrated, their wrestling department, who also co-hosts a show with Matt Hardy. He's very plugged into TNA. And I know he talks to some people there, not just Matt Hardy. I don't think Matt Hardy would have all this information. So I'm not alleging, like, I'm not source guessing here, but he is pretty plugged into TNA. And he has come out with a story that TNA's TV deal is imminent. Essentially, it's going to be done and announced before the end of the year. We're already at the end of the year. So he's 16th. He's got 6 weeks left to be right. So he's got a little bit of time here, but we're running out of time. He said that the TV deal is happening and then it is imminent and should be announced by the end of the year. And it would go into effect in 2026. And then he said that AMC is now a player in this. AMC of Walking Dead and Dark Winds. And I used to watch Breaking Bad on there, and I would watch Walking Dead back in the day, but I stopped after season 5. But it's one of the bigger cable networks that are out there. I think it's like a top 30, I think is what it said. Somebody put it in one of my chats. It was like a top 30 channel, but they don't do live sports, so it's kind of a unique fit for TNA if they were to go there. But he then went on his Patreon. I don't have all the quotes in front of me, but he further elaborated on his Patreon that AMC was heavily pursuing them, and that he, like, that if I think that he thinks that that's where they're going to end up is AMC. So
AMC is interesting. It just shows the changing TV landscape, because a decade ago, the idea of AMC running professional wrestling would be laughable. Like, AMC was the home of prestige television. Like you said, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead used to be huge. Like, it's not what it used to be, but it's good. It's not, I don't know. Someone told me it was going to be on the CW. So I guess that's not a thing.
I told you that. Yeah,
you did. I wasn't going to bury you. I was going to bury you under the clouds, but yeah.
So here's the position that I'm in. And JD, I can't send it to you right now, 'cause you're on your phone, but I'm going to send you a DM that I had back on September 23rd. I'm just going to read it, and I have the date on it, and I will send it to you at some point. But so this is from September 23rd. It says, my last discussion with someone was the latest rumbling on the TV deal side is they're talking to AMC. So this is like almost 2 months ago. I had this, right. And they said probably a rev share deal. Don't know how much they're going to keep giving this thing. So that was the speculation back 2 months ago. But at the same time, I was also told that it's very likely CW, and it's almost like in the bag at this point. I'm talking to some like media folks, like almost like ready to, they're almost ready to run the story that it's CW, but nobody does, right? Because they can't, just like the ink's not dry. But here on September 23rd, I have this AMC thing, and I can't run with it because it's only like one person, and I don't have TV contacts. I don't have like legit TNA contacts. So this I'm like, I just kind of
the right thing.
So I don't run it. And I did run it by somebody, and he's like, the person that I ran it by, who does have TV context, I haven't heard AMC, but then rattled off a few other channels that they heard, and I was like, okay, it's probably one of those things like Kurt Bauer standing outside of Viacom Studios, right? Like, remember that story that came out years ago when Kurt Bauer would just stand outside of TV studios and get his picture taken and tell Mike Johnson about it and say, I'll run a story. Like one of those deals. So I was like, okay, I sit on the thing. I don't have the skill set or the resources to be able to break this story. So I don't. But I did talk to somebody else who is kind of throwing cold water on AMC. So we'll see. But John Alba's plugged in guy. You know, me and him have had our issues in the past, but I've never said that he's not plugged in. The guy is plugged in. No. So we'll see. And AMC is kind of changing the landscape of their network a little bit, because in February they're doing a whole series on the 49ers, which, you know, now that's my favorite station. So they're doing a whole thing on the 1980s and 1990s 49ers dynasty. So that's cool.
In reality, I think it's a great thing that pro wrestling is on another TV network, non-WWE pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Someone's floating numbers in the chat. I have no zero clue if there's reality to that or not. I don't know, man. I think it's a decent thing for TNA. I can't say it's bad at all. It's not what you were told. And I kind of was messing with you. I'm like, hey, man, the deal's not real at this point. It's not until anything gets mentioned. I do think CW would have been better, especially with that WWE. I think here's what hurts TNA is that this is this year and not last year, right? 2024 was the year that everybody was getting those big deals still. And it seems like the bottom is kind of falling out of professional wrestling right now. Like, ratings are down, ticket sales, even for WWE, are starting to slip. Dave was like, I don't know what's going to happen with them when Cena's really done. Right. It's not been it for them. It's for the grand scheme of things. They're still doing very well, but they're slipping. AEW's not been great for a while now. This is kind of the cycle of pro wrestling, right? Things get hot, things cool down. It seems like we're into, and then with the economy being what it is, it's not surprising. If that being said, if TNA can get any kind of TV deal, it's better than what they've had. So
yes, it's better. Like, it's better than what they had. So Brandon Thurston here, I remember him. He says AMC Networks is publicly traded. It was in 60 million U.S. households as of last December. So probably lower now, but that's just under about as wide as ever receding cable coverage gets. Access TV is probably in half as many homes. I would guess less than half. I'd be surprised if they were in 20 million homes, to be honest with you. It's a pretty low level deal there. So, that's what it's looking like. I don't know. I'm still on the side that it's CW. That's where my head is at still. But it's one of those things, like, you never know until the ink actually dries and they make the announcement. So, I kind of hand waved the whole topic, but the story was out there. Like, John Alba's a serious guy, so I got to cover the story.
I'm going to think that there's got to be some smoke to this fire. Then again, the Saudi thing got reported a couple years ago, and then TKO wound up. Here's the thing too, is that, like, I was just reading an interesting article I was going to forward to you, from Daniel Cormier's perspective about why the wrestlers aren't dominating UFC like they were a while ago. And his argument was there's just not as many there. And he's right. There's not as many wrestlers are making the transition because college wrestling now pays people significant. Mm-hmm. NIL deals have reshaped kind of what's going on. So a lot of these wrestlers are making good money in college, and if they can keep competing, right? Or they can be done and don't have to get into fighting unless they really want to. And are you familiar with Craig Jones?
The comedian?
The jiu-jitsu player?
No, I'm not.
So he started his own Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu league that's paying really, really well. Like, paying guys.
Is money laundering or is, like, legit?
I don't know enough about it. I'm not plugged in enough to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's an Australian guy, but they're getting some, like, legit money. Like, these guys are coming in, they're making like $1 million to, like, win fights. Like, so a lot of the top BJJ guys are, like, starting to go, man, I just kind of want to fight BJJ. I don't want to get punched in the face and not get paid well. And that's right. The problem.
Yeah.
Is that Dana White doesn't, he'll defend up and down his, he'll defend not paying people until the cows come home so he can become a billionaire and that the people actually make money for him. Like, again, what's his big thing with the Khabib? Ah, Khabib went on a tour, went to these Muslim countries, and they gave him all this money and he decided he didn't want to fight anymore. Well,
yeah. So you know, he has no heart. Yeah.
He has no heart because he got paid and doesn't want to get punched in the face.
Right.
Like, and it's fascinating me because this is how this TKO thing kind of is where they're at, you know? And I think we're the economy is swooping down. There seems to be less interest in these things. And it seems like we talked about it last week on the show that the bottom might have fallen out of these streaming deals. So I think if TNA can get anything on an AMC or a CW, like you gotta call it a win. You've got to say, as much as we make fun of Carlos Silva, if he can deliver anything on this, it's a huge win for the company.
Yeah. So Brandon goes on to say, for whatever it'd be worth to a hypothetical wrestling deal, AMC reports 10.4 million streaming subs, which seems to be US. So they do have a streaming service called AMC Plus. I just don't know a single person that like subscribes to it. So
I just learned that right now when you said that.
Yeah.
I don't believe that number. I imagine those 10 million because they have 10 million because it comes with something else.
Comes with your cable package or something like
that.
Yeah. Something like that. All right, guys. TNA fans, let me get into the chat a little bit because I have kind of ignored you guys. Awesome. Yeah. King of the North said, ironic, host channel of The Walking Dead wants TNA. Ew. And so Alter the Squirrel says, TNA AMC $6.7 million deal confirmed. And then he goes on to say, I made it up.
So pretty good.
He's trolling the chat. Yes.
It's good.
We got trolls on our chat. Okay.
Appreciate it.
Let's see. Official Little Silver says he agrees with JD. Well, I don't want to hear that. Let's take that off the screen.
I'm not sure which party agrees with me on, but yeah. That Dana White pays people like shit. That's just a reality.
Yeah. Stephen Patrick says, I think it's better if TNA is not affiliated with WWE Network because if that relationship goes south, TNA will get kicked off. That is a great
fucking point. It's a great call.
So here's the problem with the theory, though, is that I think these companies want to bring TNA on with the hopes that WWE talent will be featured on those shows. So, but I don't know that you can get that baked into a contract because I don't know that WWE would actually go for that. So they'll say, hey, we're partners and we're partners for X amount of time. But I don't think they're ever going to guarantee that you're going to get WWE talent on TNA. That would be stupid for WWE to get roped into something like that.
To be frank, if that was a real thing, I think they would have a deal by now.
Yeah.
Right. I think one of WWE's partner stations would have already picked them up if that was. And there, it seems like not losing interest, but it seems like they're already putting them in the Evolve pecking order. Right.
Yeah. Let's see. Mad Dog Stuff asks, what is even on AMC?
Excellent question.
I was in a chat earlier and someone put, okay, so this is from the Voices of Wrestling like group chat for like contributors. Dark Winds, that averages 500K viewers.
Is that the show is Dark Winds the show with the Native American cop?
Yeah, and I have it on my list of shows to watch actually.
It's good. I watched the first season. Yeah, it's good actually.
It's on Netflix now, isn't it?
I think so. I think my wife and I watched that like a year ago. It's solid.
Yeah. So they got Talamasca. Never heard of that. Interview with the Vampire.
That's a show.
Yeah, they have a TV show called Interview with the Vampire. So I liked the movie in the 90s. Yeah. Mayfair Witches, Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, and Walking Dead, Dead City. So more. I did not know Walking Dead was on. Okay, so
I had no idea.
That's what's on. But most importantly, they have a 49ers. Documentary series coming out in February that I've already bookmarked. So we're getting ready for that.
I find it hilarious that the AMC has the zombie of Walking Dead still on their network. That's beautifully ironic.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. So yes, TNA had a very bad week, so bad that JD and I went 50 minutes on TNA.
It's been a long time since we've done that, man.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Here are your winners this year for the Hall of Fame. You have Spiros Arion. He won in the rest of the world category. Gran Hamada won for Japan. Daryl Dixon won for Mexico, I believe. CM Punk and Cody Rhodes and Sabu all won in the modern category. And Bobby Bruns won in the historical category. So who did you vote for any of the? I know you voted for Cody, right?
I voted for Cody and Sabu, and that was it.
Okay, I voted for Spiros, and I voted for Sabu. So two of my folks got on. So so next year, JD, we're going to be pushing Jesse Ventura, right? Like, that's going to be our guy. Yeah. Like, we're going to – yeah, we got to launch a campaign to get Jesse in.
I'm gonna be real with everybody right now. Jesse Ventura not being in as a non-wrestler is disgusting. Like,
yes,
this man was elected to a governorship under his working name, right? Find me another wrestling person that could have achieved that, has or could have achieved that in this country in a non-wrestling role. This is a man that has impact in television, in film, and in politics, and it still has a voice, still has an important voice in this country. Like,
yeah,
the fact that he didn't get in the first time round, it boggles my mind, and I've yet to hear an argument why not for Jesse.
Well, I think the first time around they might have tried to put him in as a wrestler, but he would not have. He wasn't a good wrestler.
I think this is his first year in the non-wrestler category, though.
Yeah,
because he was.
So I think this is the perfect category because he is the heel announcer. Like, he, yes, that, like, when you think heel announcer, you think Jesse. Like, he's the guy. Now, I know people did it before him, people did it after him, and you might think that Bobby the Brain Heenan did it better, but no one was bigger at it, and no one was like more famous for doing it than Jesse Ventura, and everybody that came after him was essentially kind of, you know, he kind of copying him a little bit, right? Like, he redefined what that role is.
Absolutely. Like, to this day, like, you listen to Corey Graves. Corey Graves doing Jesse Ventura. Like, it's unbelievable to me that Jesse wouldn't get in. No, this is going to be our cross to die on for the next year. Yeah. Is we are going. I'm seriously. The two of us need to go on podcasts next year across this great land and preach the name of Jesse the Body Ventura, because, like, I don't know if Jesse Ventura is not a exemplary Hall of Fame non wrestler. I don't know what one is. I really don't.
Yeah, he got 57.4% of the vote, so he's close.
He's close. He'll probably win next year. Yep. If we help push, he'll get in next year.
Yeah. Hayabusa got 58.9%, Junkyard Dog got 58.6%. So I think Junkyard Dog's been so, like, borderline forever. I wonder if he's ever going to make it in. Let me see. Matt and Jeff Hardy only got 35.6%. I don't know that those guys are going to be making it until after they retire.
It's higher than I thought they were going to get, to be honest with you.
Okay. Rick and Scott, 34.7%. I'm just going down the ones that I voted for that didn't make it in. So sorry. And Tiger Jeet Singh did not do very well. He did 31.8%. So we'll probably have to get a campaign on him, because I thought that he's a good candidate. Mike Tenay, 48.6%. So there you go. What do you think about CM Punk and Cody Rhodes going in?
I voted for Cody. Like, when you think about what Cody was able to do outside of the system and proving his value to coming back to the system, and then, like, basically spearheading the reinvigoration of the company, like, I feel like that's a pretty damn good case for the Hall of Fame. And I think I heard Bix making the argument for Cody, and I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, right? Like, because he moved numbers for AEW when they launched, moved numbers on the indies when he left, and then became part of this. I mean, like, what more can you ask for a guy?
Dude, he did 3,000 tickets in San Francisco for All Pro Wrestling in a cage match with him versus the man. Did we cut out for a sec?
Yeah, I'm back. You here?
Yeah. Mike? Hold on. Yeah. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay. My headphone cut out. My headphones died. So, okay.
Oh.
So, okay. But yeah, he ran the Cow Palace, 3,000 people, on an independent show before All In. And so, I think that he's very much a worthy candidate. I think CM Punk's a worthy candidate. I know that he left a bad taste in people's mouths after the way he left AEW, but you cannot deny that the guy is not a draw. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about the history of the business, if you take CM Punk out, is it different? And I would say yes. Like, he is
I agree with that.
Piece of the wrestling business and a very worthy Hall of Famer.
I probably will vote Punk in eventually, but I think there's people on the list right now that I think I'm going to put him
in.
Oh, Punk did get it. I'm just not that authority about going wherever again.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yeah. Punk. So I'm really glad because I was taking heat because I did not fill up my bracket and I left those two guys off of though there, even though I told people I thought they deserved to be on. I just wanted to vote for like other people that had already retired. So or they were in their careers.
I filled mine this year. I couldn't think of a reason not to fill it. Like, I don't know. It's like if I go to the buffet and say you get this much food, like I should take it, right? Because like I'm being given that. It's silly not to. So I did. I voted for some people that I hadn't thought of before, but I read like Chris Zellner's picks and I read some other people's picks. I'm like, you know what? They make a good case. So I'm a guy who if you present me a case and I find that your case is viable and holds water, I can be sold on spending my vote on somebody.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So right before we went, actually it was like, it might've been earlier today. We lost Bob Caudle. He was the famous, play-by-play guy from Mid-Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And he also was in a WCW and he did play-by-play for Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which is near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. He's also appeared on AEW. I think he died at age 95. So that man had a hell of a run. That's a good life right there.
Absolutely.
Bob Caudle. I love Bob Caudle. I think that he's got a great like announcer voice. Like
Bob Caudle. Yeah, exactly.
Like I think he could have announced any sport if he wanted to, and he probably did. Like, I don't know much about like his career outside of pro wrestling, but I get the feeling that like if he would have called football, he would have been really good at it too. I just thought he was just a really good announcer, great voice, and he didn't all the moves, and wasn't as quick as a guy like Jim Ross back in the day or Tony Schiavone. But I just thought that he was like this friendly old man that had a really great voice that just loved professional wrestling and would get really insulted when the heels cheated.
Yeah, he was like your wrestling grandpa. That's the way I always looked at him when I saw Bob Caudle. I go back and watch old WCW tapes or old NWA tapes, and Bob Caudle's there. I don't know enough about him as a person, and I'm really looking forward to The Observer this week just to read what Dave has to say about him. So, I mean, like, I'm super curious, and I might actually listen to Cornette's show this week. I haven't listened to him in a while because I imagine Jim Cornette's going to have a lot of pretty good Bob Caudle stories. So, like, I hate doing this, but I mean, with a man who was 95, I don't think I can shed a lot of tears because, like, man, you had a life. Like, you lived life, dude. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
He was old when we were kids.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Crazy. I thought I first saw him whenever I got the Pro Wrestling Illustrated videotape. It was the Lords of Pro Wrestling or something like that. Lords of the Ring, that's right. And and he was announcing matches on that. So I thought he was awesome. So rest in peace, Bob Caudle, age 95. So
good run.
Yeah, really, really good run. Okay, last topic, and we're already over the hour mark. Thank you everybody for being here. We head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. It took me an hour to plug our shit. So
we're off tonight.
Yeah. Lastly, I know that you and I both watched Blood and Guts this week, so I thought I'd try to get your thoughts on it, man. I really enjoyed Blood and Guts this year. I thought maybe two cage matches is probably way too much, and I thought there's at times there was a bunch of sloppiness, which is what you get in those matches. So it was just a fun show with lots of blood and guts, man. That was awesome.
Those chicks worked their asses off.
They did.
They wrestled. They had something to prove, and they went out there. All 10 of them were like, "We're gonna make this." I thought the women's match was better than the men's match.
Same here. I didn't think the men's match was very good until like the last 2 minutes. To be honest with you, the finish was great, but I thought the women's match was awesome. The whole thing.
Agreed. I think the combination of women they currently have in AEW is like, clearly the best they've ever had. But I mean, it's really good. Like whenever there's women's wrestling on that show, I'm like, man, I quite enjoy what the women of AEW are doing by and large at the moment. So, I mean, that's a shit ton of fun. And just seeing them just gouge each other and bleed and go to war. And what Tony Storm had this comment, "Don't ask God for mercy. He's a big fan of our work." Like, I'm like, that's fucking awesome. Like, this is great shit. Like, I expected the men's match to be what it was, but I thought the, and you know, you know, it was fine. It was good. I mean, I like war games, so like it's always a little spot for me. I think the concept of doing the two matches worked this year. I thought it's gonna be too much. Yeah. And then after the wins of that, I'm probably gonna be burnt out. I'm probably not gonna have it for the men's, and it was fine. So yeah. Big win for AEW this week.
Yeah, big win. And the palate cleanser was a world title match with Adam Page and Will Hobbs, which was also fucking awesome.
It was. I love Will Hobbs. I wish he had just a little more personality.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing I think that guy lacks is just a little more personality. I think he could really be some, because he's really good in the ring and he's got a phenomenal look to him. I just wish that personality jumped off a little bit more.
He just looks like a guy that could rip you in half with his bare hands.
Sure does. Right? We don't have enough guys in pro wrestling who just look like bad motherfuckers. And I remember the first time I saw Will Hobbs on like a dark, I was like, Jesus, this guy's a monster.
Dude,
and like, he's fun.
Dude, I went to wrestling school for one day in San Francisco, right? I told you the story, right?
Yeah. I was hoping I was going to play dumb so you could tell the story. But yeah,
Look, quick story. I went to wrestling school for one day. I was like 30, probably about 10 years ago. And I went to the school and it was like the first day of not tryouts, but it was the first day of like the academy starting up. I paid my tuition. I was like, okay, I'm going to go be a pro wrestler. And so that first day, all we did was kind of like set up the ring and kind of talk to each other. And we didn't really cut promos, but we, you know, hung out. Well, Will Hobbs was there that day. Now, it wasn't his first day. He had been already kind of like wrestling for a little bit at the time, but Will Hobbs was there. And I just could not keep my eyes off this guy because he was such a freaking beast. And here I am, some schlub, right? At the time, I'm like 190 pounds. And I'm like, why am I even here? I can't do any of these moves. I got two bad shoulders, got a bad neck. And then sure enough, Sparky Ballard, the guy that ran the school, was like, hey, Mike, you can come back tomorrow, but if you come back, you need to have like a doctor's note that says you're cleared to do this. So I went into my doctor the next day and they go, no, it's like, you had brain surgery in 2008. Your neck is fucked. You can't do this. It's like, okay. So I was like, okay, my pro wrestling dream was over after one day, but I did get to meet Will Hobbs and I get to like be in his presence before he ever got famous. So it was such a beast.
It's pretty cool. Did you get to do anything in the ring? Did you at least get to go in there?
Yeah, but we didn't like roll around or anything. We just kind of set it up. So they taught me how to set up the ring, and that was really it. And like Thunder Rosa was there, and she was like yelling at us the whole time, trying to be a drill sergeant. And like I was there with some kids, right? Like 17-year-old kids, and I'm like 30, and they're all like kind of nervous and like thinking she's mean. And like they're looking at me, it's like this doesn't bother you? I was like, brother, I was like, I went through basic training. I've been to Afghanistan. Like this little woman is not intimidating me whatsoever.
That's a good story.
Yeah, Ishmael, did you get a refund from the school? They offered a refund, and I just never went back to go get it. Yeah. No, he DM'd me, the guy that runs the school, is like, hey, Mike, I'll give you your money. I paid in cash. He's like, I'll give you your money back, but you just got to come back and pick it up. It was like $300, and I was kind of like ashamed that I couldn't do it anymore. I just felt bad, so I just didn't go back. So
in all honesty, $300 really kind of probably helped them out. So
yeah.
Karmatically, yeah. I think you did a good thing by just letting them have it, in all honesty.
Yeah, for sure. But it was a good week for AEW, and a really, really bad week for TNA. So bad, in fact, that we had to do 50 minutes on TNA wrestling. So if you want more TNA talk, brace for impact. We'll be back this week. I will be doing another TNA show. I'm going to hold on as long as I can, man. But if they don't fucking turn this ship around, I don't know. It might be brace for like MLW or something, or brace for NWA. Like NWA is like really bad, but it's probably like so bad that it's fun to watch. Like TNA is just infuriating to follow, right? Just infuriating.
Yeah, I get it. Like it's just becoming like another WWE like sub company right now. So it's like, I don't know, man, that's not for me. I'm surprised it's still for you at this point.
Well, you know, what I was explaining on Thursday night, it's like, you know, I love my podcast. I love the Brace for Impact brand. I love the chat. I've put a lot into that branding and a lot into that podcast for a long time. I don't want to give it up. And then also, like, a big part of my online footprint is my coverage of TNA, right? And so, oh, gosh.
I'm pulling it up.
Okay. Mike Gilbert presents Born for Greatness. That actually might be the show, now that I think about it.
Oh, Born for Greatness. I love it.
I still have yet to see a Glate show.
Nobody has. Nobody's watched a Glate show.
Yeah.
It's like a fictional company. It's not real.
Right. Oh, but shit. You know, kind of like a big part of what I do online is like my coverage of TNA. But that Mike Santana stuff, like I was like, this is the dumbest fucking company that's ever been in history. Like, they don't deserve a TV deal. If they get one, they're going to fucking blow it because they just don't have the leadership infrastructure in place. They don't have smart enough people running that company to be able to be successful when they come on TV. Because, like, legit, if you take away the Hardys and you take away WWE, they're back in fucking bingo halls like overnight.
You're right. And they lost a lot of their other talent. They discarded a lot of talent when this WWE deal started. And as much as I like Ace Austin a lot, always have, like, he's just going to be a guy who shows up on AEW on occasion, which is good for him because he gets a job. He's getting paid. You know, I'm happy for him about that. But I mean, like, I'd be happier if he was wrestling on shows every week, you know, and being and playing a role somewhere. This is why. So everything is stupid. Pro wrestling just on the whole sucks right now. And it makes me sad. And I wish it was just better. Like, remember like 2022 when everything was like pretty solid, right? And everything was like kind of fun.
Yeah. Like CM Punk was back and like we were coming out of the pandemic and crowds were huge and wrestling was great. Like, you know, you had Vince was getting out of wrestling and WWE starts getting better. And like now the two companies are actively competing. Well, like that peak is done, man. WWE's numbers are falling. They're flailing right now. Once Cena's gone, I don't really worry about them. I think that 2026 can be a tough year for them, not monetarily because their TV deals are locked in, but I'm just talking about popularity wise. I think they're going to have a struggle. And we've seen AEW struggles. Every time they have a good show, like the following week, they take a few steps back. And it's not like poor booking or anything like that. It's just like, they just can't keep the flame going, you know, and that's tough. And then TNA is fucking TNA.
It's just hard. Like it's hard to keep things interesting. And like I said, I would love to see someone do something unique. And it seemed like here's where I know things are slipping is like, you know, I teach high school kids. Right. And I knew WWE was really popular when I would walk into class and kids would do the tribal chief ones. Right. That's when I was like, God damn, WWE is fucking popular. And it's been a while since I've heard anyone talking about WWE in class. It's been a while since I've seen somebody turn in a WWE related project. So it's kind of like these are the kind of like it's anecdotal evidence. Don't get me wrong, but it's ones that I can kind of like just because I'm around kids all the time. I kind of get the vibe, and WWE specifically kind of still kind of gears themselves a little bit for that. But a lot of the TKO decisions, like they're just come and say, yeah, we're trying to make as much money as possible. We don't give a fuck about families and stuff like that. Like it's just. Their attitudes are just kind of like, do I really want to be a part of this? And then, I don't know, there's just something about them, man. And New Japan sucks, too. I'm supposed to be sad that Tanahashi doesn't get to wrestle somebody from WWE. I'm supposed to be sad.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to shed tears over the fact that Tanahashi doesn't want to or doesn't get the chance to work with a guy who left their company a decade ago to go make money for some of the to surf and not give a shit. I'm supposed to shed tears over that. Fuck that. I will never cry over a guy who signed with WWE or a WWE in general. Like it's just the thought of it. Like
ended up working out because now Tanahashi's wrestling his greatest opponent ever. Okada. And they sold out the Tokyo Dome already. And now they have to open up more seats.
But no, I'm supposed to be sad that I don't get to see Nakamura half-ass it in New Japan. Like,
did you see that there's some Alex Jones types saying that Tony Khan vetoed Nakamura and that's why we're not getting that match. It's like they just made it up, by the way. Like that was never like a thing. That was not true. It was something that they just said. But
Kidani said like Tanahashi wanted it and Kidani's like, nah, we're not gonna do that. Like we do business with these guys. We have one company who we are definitely subservient to, but wants us in business, and another company that would like to crush us under their boot heel. So, which one of these devils do we support? You know, like, you know, fuck Nakamura, fuck everything about that, fuck WWE. I don't give a shit.
I always respect Nakamura because he's stealing money from WWE, and he has been for 10 years.
I do respect that. His knee strikes look so bad right now. I saw someone gif it. It's like the fucker doesn't even try anymore. Good for him. But I don't need to see that in a New Japan show that I'm actually going to watch. Like, I'm actually going to watch Wrestle Kingdom this year.
Yeah.
A lot of it's I'm super curious about Aaron Wolf. But, like, I don't know.
I heard he's struggling a little bit, but I have not seen him myself.
It takes time. Like, he's in a weird spot. You know, like, he's literally one of the greatest judokas from Japan ever. So I'm really curious to see how he transitions. He's a big star over there. You know, I'm sure Stevie Richards wasn't just sucking at the corporate teat. He would talk about why Aaron Wolf is amazing because he's a star, and that's why he's the greatest of all time. But Stevie Richards is a fucking douchebag, so he won't say something like that.
I don't think Stevie Richards ever watched New Japan either.
So. I don't think Stevie Richards could find Japan on a map, quite frankly.
No. All right, guys, we are over time now. That's going to do it for us this time on the Mike and JD Show. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from...
Fucking Jeremy,
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.